Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Rich Guthrie is back in Studio A for today's show to share his burning knowledge and answer your questions. And he brought a friend, Peg D. Benedetto of the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society and the Catskill Center for Conservation, also joining us today. So it's very rare, but once in a while we have two brilliant bird brains on this program to answer your questions. The answer to your questions can be had by giving us a call now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich and Peg and your bird questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds on the show today. Rich Guthrie and Peg D. Benedetto are here to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Peg is a raptor enthusiast whose primary interest and experience is with bald and golden eagles. Peg is a member of the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society. She is on the board of directors of the Catskill Center for Conservation, which is hosting its annual bird conference in conjunction with this year's New York State Ornithological Association annual meeting in September. If you have a question about birds, get in line now. It's a popular show. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. You can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Peg D. Benedetto, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
We know Rich very well, but Peg, is this your first time on the program?
It is.
Well, so nice to have you here. And you are a raptor enthusiast. When did you become a raptor enthusiast?
Oh, I guess about a dozen years ago, I started working with bald eagles, monitoring nests on some reservoirs and water bodies. And then I became involved with the Eastern Golden Eagle Project through the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society.
And what does that project do?
So we track golden eagles in New York State. We run a study site to count the numbers and to study their habits. And once in a while, we capture them, put telemeters on them, and send them off to teach us about their natural history, their migratory patterns, and their local habits.
Now, Rich and I often have discussed the almost spectacular resurgence of bald eagles around here. Is the same true for golden eagles?
Not exactly. Golden eagles are a completely different population that we only have as residents in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
So very little is actually known about the eastern population, and we're just starting to figure out population numbers and such. We think that the population has gone down and may be continuing a decline.
Theories of why?
Trapping, just many threats that they encounter in the U.S. and in Canada can affect their populations. And so part of the study is to try to figure out what's happening with the population numbers.
Rich Guthrie is here and Peg D. Benedetto. And Peg, you have a big bird conference coming up in conjunction with the Catskill Center for Conservation.
We do. We have an annual bird weekend that we enjoy putting on for the general public. And this year we volunteered to host the New York State Ornithological Association annual meeting as well. So we're going to be meeting in Kingston the second weekend in September. Everyone is invited. We got a smashing weekend coming up. We've got tremendous field trips that were organized by the John Burroughs Natural History Society.
So bird walks.
Absolutely. Bird walks, excursions. It goes from a historical walk in downtown Kingston to kayaking, birding by kayak,
yeah.
Actually. And we also offer a pre-dawn hike up Slide Mountain to attempt to encounter the elusive and iconic Bicknell's thrush.
Oh, very interesting. Will you be there, Rich?
I will be there, that's for sure.
Yeah?
I'm not quite sure about the hike up Hunter Mountain.
This one's Slide Mountain.
I've been there, and it is very interesting, and it's one of the only place in this Catskills areas at the high peaks of the mountains where you'll find the Bicknell's thrush, where they nest. Otherwise, there's a population up in the Adirondacks and in Quebec, Canada.
But it's not a slam dunk you'll actually see one.
No, but we've had very successful weekends in the past. It's on the list of many birders to actually encounter one. Mm. And I don't think we've ever been skunked in the last 4 years.
With knowledgeable people, the task becomes easier.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's who will be there. There'll be expert guides to bring you up.
But you say these are elusive. So if you go up with a group of people, say 20 or 30.
Oh, that's already a problem.
Yeah.
We limit the trips to many fewer people than that. And birders know what they're looking for, and they know that if they make too much noise, they might not get the.
So if Guthrie exciting. Drops a bag full of empty cans, everyone will get mad at him?
Absolutely.
Again.
Again. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here, and Peg D. Benedetto. It's the Bird Show. What's new with you, Mr. Guthrie?
Things is good. We're into the tail end of the nesting season. Birds are beginning to get ready to move south. In fact, a good number of them have already started their long journeys. If you go down by the Hudson River or the Connecticut River Valley, you'll see swallows by the hundreds just streaming south. And other birds are getting ready. They're finished raising their young. There may be a few that have another brood that they're taking on, but the most of them are now molting their feathers, getting ready new feathers to begin their journey to Central South America or perhaps New Jersey.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. And before we get to the calls, let's take care of a couple of emails that came in much earlier today. This one's from Diane in Suffield, Connecticut. Diane writes, "We had a barred owl hanging around in our backyard most of the time in our big old white pine from around Christmas time until mid-April or so. We'd spot him nearly every single day. We dubbed him Waldo, as in the Where's Waldo books, because he could be very difficult to spot, but when we found him, we'd notice that he'd doze all day in the same spot and leave at dusk to go hunting. Oddly, I never saw him bother the birds at the feeder. We live next to a wooded area with a vernal pool, so I hope he is still out there somewhere close by. Do you think there's any chance he'll return and show himself in the backyard again this winter?" And that is from Diane in Suffield.
Well, the answer is more than likely yes. The barred owl is a creature of the night, but they are one of the owls that will perch in the daylight, sometimes quite conspicuously, blending in with the background. If you have an eye for them, you can probably locate them now and then. Owls also have a favorite perch that they like to come back to for roosting or for feeding.
Yeah.
Their main prey is mice and voles, small mammals, so the likelihood of bothering the birds at the feeder is slim, and they'll be what they like about the feeder is the little critters that come around after dark, picking up the scraps from, and then it becomes a ready menu.
You know, we did our usual summer trip to southern Maine. I just got back. And you know what I call seagulls, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the winged rats of the deep.
Well, those
usually
guys.
Said in pirate, you know, the winged rats of the deep.
Yes.
What do they eat when they're not eating things that are left by careless beachgoers?
Well, they are actually rather not very selective in their food choices.
I noticed, yes.
Anything they can find.
Really?
If it looks good, it probably is.
But dead, right? They don't eat. They don't hunt.
No, they'll actually go after live fish or crabs or the like. But they'll take shellfish that wash up after a storm, which is very interesting because in order to crack open the shell of a clam, they'll fly up and go over a parking lot or a sidewalk or a rooftop and drop it.
Huh.
To break it open and then just drop right down and help themselves to the broken clam shell. And other than that, they'll scavenge along the seashore looking for things that wash up.
They sure do.
Yep. And they like a tuna sandwich.
Okay. All right. That sounds like experience talking there. This one is from Joanne in Ballston Spa. Joanne writes, I'm an avid bird watcher with three bird feeders and feed the birds both summer and winter. I've noticed that both the red-winged blackbirds and the rose-breasted grosbeak have not been around for the past couple of weeks. I miss them already since they were constantly at my feeder. I also realize the red wings are one of the first birds to appear mid-spring. Can you tell me how far south do these birds go in the winter, and why do they leave so soon? And that's from Joanne.
Well, that's a good question. The red-winged blackbird and rose-breasted grosbeak. So essentially summer visitors here for the breeding season, spend the summer, then go south for the winter. The rose-breasted grosbeak will go as far as South and Central America for the winter. The red-winged blackbird may be only as far as New Jersey or the Carolinas, with a few of them lingering in more favorable areas in the Hudson Valley or the Connecticut Valley.
All right, Rich Guthrie is our guest. Also today, Peg Di Benedetto, and we'll take your calls in a minute. Peg, you've heard the show, right?
Absolutely. So I never miss it.
We take calls, and the lines are already loaded up. We'll take a quick break. 800-348-2551 is the number, and then we'll get to the phones. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551, The Bird Show today. And we have Peg Di Benedetto and Rich Guthrie here to answer your questions. And we have another stack of emails, which I won't read now. We have to get to the phones. But there is one here right in your wheelhouse, Peg. And so I thought we would read this one and then jump on the phone lines. This one is from Pal in Cold Brook. And Pal writes, I live on a ridgetop inside the Adirondack Park. Raptors soar here looking for an easy meal. I'd love to have a pet cat, but I'm afraid a larger raptor might snatch and kill my cat. Is that a realistic risk?
Well, it's a realistic risk with owls that might be hanging around your house. Chances are most raptors won't bother your cat.
What about small children?
Small children will definitely bother your cat.
Oh, well, well played. Pal also writes, I'm also concerned about what harm the cat might cause, as we've got a variety of birds here, including robins and occasional ducks or geese on our small pond. This is one of Rich's big soapbox things. I'll let you take it this time, though.
So I'm with Rich on this one. Cats are exotic invasive species, and birds are suffering enough issue from all other threats, and so I try very hard not to add any more threats to their to their populations.
And cats can be very happy indoors.
This is true.
How many cats do you have?
Zero.
Okay, and how do you know they're happy?
I know. I used to. My cat is gone.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I brought up a sore subject. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Dean in Old Chatham. Dean, thank you for waiting. You're on.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm a big fan of yours and Rich, and I couldn't be happier to call today because I saw a bald eagle in my front yard last night.
Cool.
Around 6, and it was eating a turkey chick, and I saw it driving down the road and stopped and was able to stalk it. So I got around 30 feet away, and I watched it for about 10 minutes. And then I guess 2 weeks ago, I saw two eagles eating a deer a mile from my house. So they're really making a comeback around here.
That's a big
meal. My question is, I thought eagles were mainly water, lived on water and ate fish, because I've seen them fishing in the Hudson a lot. So could you answer that question, why I'm seeing so many? I saw one with a snake in a fresh mowed field a month ago. So I've seen about four in the last month within 3 miles of my house. So
bald eagles do fish. They are fish eagles, but they are also scavengers, and they are also opportunists. So they will take advantage of whatever they find when they find it, and they're often seen eating on roadkill deer at the side of the road. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. You answered my question. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dean. We appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here today, joined by Peg Di Benedetto, and we go to Bess in Albany. Bess.
Oh,
Hello.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi, I'm here.
Yes.
Hi.
And I have a Japanese willow at the front of my house, and little grayish-brown birds, either wren or titmice, are always there chirping away from dawn till dusk, and they're snipping off all the leaves one by one. They're noisy, and I don't so much mind the noise, so sometimes at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, you know. But the leaves are dropping, and pretty soon the tree's going to be bare of leaves. Is there a way I can keep them off my bush?
Probably not, unless you go to rather extreme measures, such as putting cheesecloth over it or some netting,
netting
to exclude
yeah.
them. But I'm very curious to what's going on there. The birds really don't eat vegetable matter for that much. Occasionally, they'll go after flowering buds or in the springtime or in the wintertime. Some birds will take the buds or seeds from a tree, but going after leaves is unusual. There's probably something else that's working on the leaves, and the birds are helping themselves to the something else.
I think that where the leaf meets the branch, there's a little bit of a seed or a bud, like you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when they nip that out, the leaf just falls off.
Mm. Well, just out of curiosity, what kind of tree is this? Or bush?
It's a Japanese willow, one of those round, molded, ornamental shrubs with the variegated green and white leaves.
Wow.
It's very willowy, and it, I think that they're, because I went out and looked at what they could be after this. I'm standing at the window now. There's a bunch of them in there. And I think that they're nipping out whatever little seed or bud is right at the crooks of the leaf and the branch.
Well, that's very interesting. All I can think of is that it's a rather unfortunate combination of the type of tree and the birds themselves. So, back to native trees and the like, I really don't run into birds nipping at leaves and stripping a tree of leaves.
I thought about spraying something like
I wouldn't
some
do that.
Vinegar
I would,
and nah. No, not that.
If you're going to go to that extreme, just go ahead and get the mesh covering on it and see if you could cover it over, exclude the birds. And
or something that doesn't smell good, like just garlic or something that would ward them off from the smell.
No, that won't work. Most birds aren't bothered by sense of smell.
All right. Well, Bess, good luck. Of course, if you cover the willow, what good is having the willow? You have it covered.
Well,
it's like having a cover on your couch that you don't sit on.
That's right. That's right. And it's one of those things. Apparently, that group of birds have learned that there's a nutrients source of at those trees.
Interesting.
Again, it's not something that I run into out there. It's flowers and winter buds, over buds, that's another story.
Now, could it be that your first supposition is correct and that there are some insects at work, and so the losing of the leaves is actually due to the insects and not the birds?
That's what first comes to mind, but this is an unusual situation, and I've not run into it. I'll do some digging on that next time around. We'll see if I can provide some more back story on that.
Why don't you find a Japanese willow and take a nibble and let us know how it tastes?
I've done that.
Have
it's
you?
Not so bad.
Okay.
Well, not so much Japanese willow, but weeping willow.
Fair. Delicious. No, our legal department would not recommend that anyone try that.
Well, that's
that
where aspirin comes from, is the...
You're kidding me.
Acetylsalicylic acid.
Well, the things you learned that you didn't need to know. Scott in Schoharie, you're on.
Yes, I was trying to find out when you all would recommend cutting pastures to not disrupt breeding season with birds that are in hay pastures in this part of the country.
Well, thanks for that.
I'm in the Schoharie Valley.
Yeah, that's a great question, because our grassland bird species are having a very difficult time finding a hay field and nesting in it, and then turn around and have that hay cut right underneath them with the nest eggs and young still intact there. So the best rule of thumb is 1st of August and thereafter, so that gives them a chance to get their first and perhaps a second brood out and fully fledged and on the wing, and gives them a chance to get away. The other recommended would be to go from the center outwards towards the sides, rather than so that birds can flee sideways rather than towards the center where they become concentrated at the at the last run. So I'd give that a try. It's I know it's very difficult, but
Yeah. One other tag-on question. If you're grazing, any recommendations for folks that go through and graze with animals?
Grazing and grassland birds seem to get along much better. The birds have a way, for example, killdeer or some of the upland sandpipers or bobolinks have a way of distracting a cow or horse away from where the nest is. They do a pretty good job of shooing the animal away. And the nesting birds have a much better chance of, I've seen where birds have nested in, let's say, horse paddocks and have done very well through the season. Hmm.
Super. Sir, thanks for your reply.
Thanks, Scott. We appreciate the call. Anytime, Peg, you want to jump in and answer any of these questions, you go right. Just
okay.
Even if you have to kick Rich in the shins, he'll stop, and then you can jump in. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Peg DiBenedetto is here from the Catskill Center for Conservation, the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society. Rich Guthrie, you know very well from these airwaves. If you have a question about birds, give us a call. And now we go to Andrew in Kingston. Andrew.
Yeah, hi. I think this would be an easy question for Rich. I saw a bird that I've never seen before. He's rather large, and he has a yellow head that extends all the way down his back, and then it becomes black. But it's not a goldfinch. It's larger than a goldfinch.
Okay.
Interesting. When did you see this bird?
Oh, a few days ago.
Oh,
and
really?
I put the binoculars on him, and... He's definitely bigger than a goldfinch. I would recognize a goldfinch because they're small birds. But he's a pretty good size. I'd say he's almost the size of a crow.
Oh.
And he has a big yellow head, and it goes halfway down his back and then turns black.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, I'm going to suggest that not quite the size of a crow, but size is difficult to gauge out there in the wild. I'm thinking that perhaps it was an oriole of some sort. Baltimore oriole comes to mind.
But they're orange, aren't they?
Say that again?
He said they're orange,
they're
aren't
orange.
They?
Well, yellow-orange. The female especially will be yellowish.
And variations.
And variations of yellow can be orange, depending on age and diet.
I have seen some Baltimore orioles around, too. So.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
yeah, who knows? I'm going to look in my bird books as soon as I get a chance.
That's what Rich is doing right now.
I'm just going through. In fact, I'll hold up. If you're watching on the...
Yes, if you're watching on the radio...
My ex-wife has my bird book, and she won't give it back.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, you might have to call an attorney on that one. And, Andrew, good luck with that. Thank you, sir, for the call.
Or head down to the library.
Or head to the library. That'll Certainly. Work, too. Mm-hmm. Or take a picture and email it to Rich, and your email address, Rich, is...
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
And you like to identify those sorts of things, right?
It's always a challenge. It's a, you know, that's why I go out in the field with my binoculars and camera in hand.
Lots of fun.
Peg, you've known Rich for some time, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
It seems like a long time.
Did you know that he once saw an extinct woodpecker?
Oh, I thought that was you?
That was I.
What was the name of the woodpecker again?
The ivory-billed woodpecker.
Were you with?
In Arkansas with the Cornell University team.
Yeah, you were with John Fitz at that point in time.
I was.
You were on the team.
Yes, correct.
Are you skeptical about that?
No, I'm in awe. I'm impressed. And I have no reason to doubt the educated, erudite people involved in the sighting.
Guthrie's erudite.
Well, the rest of the team was very.
I see. All right, back to the phones we go. It's Dina and Newburgh. Dina, you're on.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're on.
I have a question. I heard something about a golden eagle. It was on an unrelated station, and that they have a special lens. That's why they can fly into the sun. Can you speak about that?
Special eye lens.
Eye lens. So I am not aware of that. I know that they, I haven't actually heard that.
Do they fly into the sun often?
They fly
said, that's
is
what the host was talking about, and I said that is really, really something.
Well,
and
many raptors
born today and talking about the.
Many okay. raptors will have a bone structure that extends, it's like a baseball cap over the eye that shields the eye from direct rays of the sun and gives them effective sighting in bright light.
Huh. That could be it.
Okay, that's probably what they were talking about, but they were referring specifically to the golden eagle.
Interesting.
Okay, well,
interesting.
Thank you for that.
Thanks,
thank
Dina.
You.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Peg D. Benedetto and Rich Guthrie here to answer your birding questions. And let's see who's waiting longest here. Now we go to Tor in Delanson. Tor.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing all right. How about you?
Good. So, you know, I live out, I'm about 30 miles, west of Albany, but it's farm country and lots of woods and everything. And I live on a property. It's about 50 acres, half pasture, half woods, connects to a whole bunch of other woods. And we've had such an explosion of cottontail rabbits this spring. They're everywhere. I mean, I can go a quarter mile down the dirt road and count 15 of them, but I've not seen one raptor here all year. Not a hawk, not an owl. I go out at night to see if I can hear the owls hooting. And I'm just really surprised that I haven't seen anything, you know, in the way of birds of prey that would have quite a good meal.
Hmm.
Well,
So my question is, it's not really a question, more of an observance, but I hawks, they get the airstream, they fly up and they're looking for food, but I just don't get any of that here. And I find it very odd, you know.
Well, here's,
I just don't see anything.
Here's what happens out there. There's a cycle in the prey population of rabbits or mice or voles or squirrels, where the numbers will increase and then peak, and immediately following that will be a cycle in the raptors or predators, where there'll be an increase and then peak. They consume the prey population. Collapses, the raptor population responds in a similar fashion. So it's sort of like a trailing curve. And right now, I agree with you. I'm seeing a lot of cottontail rabbits out there, but I'm also seeing a fair share of hawks as well, especially the red-tailed hawk. And I haven't heard of any problems that the barred or great horned owls and nighttime predators for those for that prey. So I think it's just a matter of observational time and opportunity that is coming into play. They're
so
out
they're
there.
They're on their way.
The red-tailed hawk is doing fine.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. I appreciate it.
All right, Tor. Thanks for the call.
And good luck. Thanks for that.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here and Peg D. Benedetto. And let's see. We'll take another call here before the break. Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike.
Hey, hello. How are you guys?
All right.
I have just a quick question. I had a little house friend move into our bird box this year, and two questions. Should we clean it out once she's done now, but I would wait till later in the year? And number two, what impact would it be if I just moved it a little bit across the yard in a similar location? Because I think it was a little close to where we were.
as soon as they're done, go ahead and clean it out. It'll be better than not. Some of these wren nest boxes are enclosed, such as a hollowed out gourd or the like, and you'll just have to leave it up to them to clean it out. But then moving it should have no impact. Wrens can be happy in a lot of different situations, and if you move it across the yard, they'll find it and make a happy home out of it.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Now, Rich, we've talked about the phoebes that we had make a nest under our porch roof. And, you'd mentioned that it's probably the same family that comes back.
More than likely.
If you were to move a house that has wrens across your yard 50, 100 feet, would it be likely that the same family would come back?
More than likely.
Really? How would they tell? In other words, are they sighting geographically or by smell? In other words, how do they find that house if it moves?
It's not a problem. They're looking for an optimum site. First of all, they're going to come back to the general vicinity of where they hatched out or were raised, because that worked before. It should work again. And in nature, it happens a lot. The tree limb that they nested on fell down, or the hole was occupied by another critter, such as a squirrel or the like, in nature. So when they come back, they're going to be looking for the best place available, whether it's right there or down the road. They'll make it work.
This interests me very much, how birds will come back. And I know, Peg, you mentioned that in your research into golden eagles that you have actually tagged some with telemetry. Mm-hmm. What have you learned from that?
So we've learned that some of them seem to be site-specific, that we get them back occasionally, winter after winter. We've learned migratory patterns, that they go way up into Canada to spend the summers to breed and raise their youngs. And we've also learned that the Adirondacks may be the farthest north that they spend the winters, but we're not really sure. We're just grazing the surface
this
here.
This is great.
There's a lot to learn.
Who's compiling the data?
So it's researchers from the Appalachian Eagle Project, mm-hmm, who are putting together all of the statistics, the data, and trying to make the conclusions that will help us understand more about the natural history.
Well, as the years go on, we'll have you back on, and we'll learn more and more about this program. Let's take a break on this program. It's Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Peg DiBenedetto, and your calls, more of them coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551, the number. Peg DiBenedetto and Rich Guthrie here to answer your bird questions. And Mr. Guthrie, it's that time of the show. The kids gather around the radio and they sit closely by to listen to your list of things.
Things are happening. This is a perfect time to get out there and join a group of other birders to see what you can find. Mm. For example, in the Albany area this coming Sunday, August 11th, you can go with the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club to Peebles Island State Park for a walk around there. Mm. And later on this month, from the 25th of August through the 29th, they'll be counting nighthawks at the Pine Bush Discovery Center in Albany.
Do you use infrared binocs for that?
Well, you don't have to. They'll fly right over your head.
Really?
They'd come out in the dusk as they are migrating south.
All right.
Check with the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, hmbc.net, for time, place, and location. And then in Dutchess County, the Waterman Bird Club will be doing a trip tomorrow to Nuclear Lake in Poquick.
Nuclear Lake?
Nuclear Lake.
What the heck?
Ah, come and find out.
All right.
Odd birds there.
Radioactive?
Maybe.
Is it heavy water?
Check it out.
Okay.
Saturday the 10th, they'll be going to Clinton Vineyards. Again, that's in Dutchess County, New York. And the 14th, Tamarack Preserve in Turkey Hollow. That is at watermanbirdclub.org.
Okay.
Down in Orange County, New York, Mearns Bird Club will be going to Oil City Road on the 24th of August and then to the Black Dirt Region, mm-hmm, on the 31st of August. That's mearnsbirdclub.org. Westchester County, New York, the Hudson River Audubon Society on the 18th will be going to the famous Jamaica Bay Wildlife Refuge.
Yeah.
That's world famous down there in New York City. The time of year when shorebirds, sandpipers, plovers, and the like will be showing up. And then on that will be on the 18th of August. Then on the 24th, they'll be going to the Lenoir Nature Preserve. And that will be a bird and butterfly walk. Again, that's the Hudson River Audubon Society, HRAS.org.
All right.
Over in Springfield, Massachusetts, check out the Allen Bird Club. On the 17th, they'll be doing a canoe and kayak trip down in the Connecticut River. And then on the 24th, it's Long Meadow and Agawam. Again, the Allen Bird Club in Springfield, Massachusetts. And one more, and that's the John Burroughs Natural History Society in Ulster County, New York. We'll be visiting the Grigg Farm for Birds and Butterflies. That's jbnhs.org.
All right. And Peg, you had mentioned that you are teaming with the John Burroughs.
We are.
For the big birding conference.
Absolutely. They've got a lot of excellent naturalists and birders that are going to be leading all of the excursions.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And we'll find out a little bit more about that coming
up.
We have a little stack of emails here, and we'll try to race through these and then get back to the phones. This one's from Luke. Luke's subject heading, noisy kestrels, silent kestrels. I live alongside a large park at the old Plattsburgh military base. Every year, I noticed what I think are kestrels chasing around and screeching. This year, though, the racket was insane, going on for weeks as the birds seemed to be having a turf war. One pair appeared to be picking on a third that was nesting across the park from their favorite tree. Then a week ago, the noise suddenly stopped. What gives?
I don't know, Rich. You think somebody won?
Well, it's probably multiple family units out there.
Yeah. The
young kestrels, when they hatch out, can be very, very noisy.
They are. Okay.
Little sibling rivalry, and then also neighborhood turf wars. So, and this is part of growing up, learning how to do things.
Is it common for them to go on for weeks like that?
Well, yeah. Yeah. But then and soon they'll be gathering up and migrating south.
You know what they call that in the old days? Going to the mattresses. Right? Gets rid of the bad blood.
That's after they move south a little.
This is from Mike in Providence / Galway. Do birds interbreed at all? I've read that it isn't possible biologically. I'd like to hear your explanation as to exactly why it's impossible. Are there some that possibly can interbreed? Finches, thrushes, etc.
Highly unlikely. Birds, this is where we have to get back to the scientific definition of species and what defines a species, what separates one from another. And there are so many factors involved. But primarily what it is the courtship. Birds are attracted to and look for what they expect to find in the courtship, the song and the plumage and the behavior of a potential mate. That is one of the driving factors. But then there are some overlaps in there where you will find very rarely some hybridization going on out there. Of course, the birders are always keen to take note of that. But in the meantime, it's very rare. There are a couple of notable examples where they do interbreed, like the golden wing warbler, but as a rule, not likely.
All right. This one is from Rob. Could you please give a recommendation for an Android app I can use to help identify songs of birds? I would like something I could hold up and listen to a bird song and then have it tell me what the bird is. I tell you, I agree with Rob. I heard one in the backyard. You were unable to identify it. I was unable to properly imitate it. And that would be a great app. Is there such a thing?
There are several of them out there. You could go to the Cornell University website. They have a couple of identification aids. And also the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has a couple of apps out there that will help identify birds. There's also Merlin, M-E-R-L-I-N, which is an excellent bird identification site. And I'll try to think of a few others that might come to mind. But if you, a search out there will bring up a dozen or so good sites that I would highly recommend.
Peg, you have one in mind?
Oh, I use Merlin all the time.
There you go.
Yep.
This one's from Susan in Eckerd. We have an abundance of chipmunks and would like to attract an owl to move onto our property. We have an acre and a half. Would an owl box in a high tree attract an owl? How far from the house should it be placed? How high up in the tree?
That's from Susan.
The answer is yes.
What?
Yes.
There were three questions there.
If you put up a nest box, if there is an owl looking for a place to nest, the screech owl will readily come to a nest box with a 3-inch hole in it and maybe a 12 to 14 or 18-inch depth. And the height doesn't really matter that much, but make it easy on yourself so that it's safe for you to get up there and reach up and put it in place.
How far from the house?
It doesn't matter. Okay. I would say the other end of the yard or thereabouts.
And
you might as well have the hole facing the house. But the chances of one finding it that's on the outside of odds.
All right. This is the last email, and then we'll try to get through as many calls as we can here at the tail end of the program. This is from Mary in Delmar. I got a hand-me-down bird bath at the end of July, but it's gotten no business yet. I put it in a spot I thought would be attractive to the many birds in my backyard. It's at the corner of my garage, somewhat sheltered, no perches nearby for cat attacks, clear line of sight for birds who are flying overhead. I installed a water wiggler. whatever that is, to agitate the water subtly to keep it from becoming a mosquito breeding ground. Do you have any recommendations for attracting more customers?
Well, what you did is really brilliant. Right now, this time of year, water is one of the main attractions for birds. And you put it out there, they really ought to be finding it and coming. Yeah. Once they do, then you got them. And it takes a while for birds to discover something like that, but I'm surprised that you haven't gotten some business yet.
And it might help to change the water quite
periodically. Often. Yeah. You don't want it to be too murky or green, but
okay, all right. And I just like to say water wiggler. So.
Yeah, right. Maybe it's a water wiggler. I'm not quite sure if that.
Yeah, they might be a little worried about that.
Perhaps it's a little too wiggly.
I mean, if it looks like an alligator with a swishing tail, that might do it.
All right. Judy in Rochester. Judy, you're on.
Hi, thanks so much. We're deprived in Rochester. I'd like to start my 8-year-old granddaughter or introduce her to the world of butterflies and birds. Can you recommend some good guides, websites, and good starter feeders?
Well, I can. Let me suggest first off that the New York Ornithological Association has a group called Young Birders, and these are kids who learn together with organized field trips and meetings and gatherings, and I tell you, it's been a great success with the younger birding crowd out there. The New York State Ornithological Association, check it out and look for the Young Birders. And they will also have a lot of links to recommended sites for learning.
And there are books. Okay. I mean, the book that you always refer to, Rich, is what?
I like to use Corey Finger's Field Guide to the Birds of New York and also National Geographic.
What about the Crosley?
The Crosley Guide.
Yeah.
Go get them.
Okay. Well, Judy, thanks a lot for the call. We now zip over to Wappingers Falls. And Scott, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I've got a neighbor who's a bird enthusiast, and she's put a couple of different bird feeders out for seed for the birds to eat. My house is only about 25 or 30 feet from these feeders, and they just kind of line up all over the house. Sometimes there's 30 or 40 of them. I'm wondering if this is going to cause any harm or damage to, like, the roof or the side of my house with their pecking, maybe, or their waste. So I'm just hanging out there waiting for their turn at the feeder. And if there is a problem with that, is there anything I can do to maybe deter it a little bit?
Probably, I don't think that you're going to encounter much of a problem with that sort of situation. It depends on, I think, on the size of the birds, the number of the birds and the like. So
they look like they're smaller than a robin or a blue jay. They're very small, and but there's a good number of them. There's at least 40 or 50 at a time sometimes.
I wouldn't think that would, even with those numbers for a small bird like that, that will create a nuisance problem for you or a structural hazard in any sort. They're just perched there waiting for their turn at the feeders, and more interesting.
All right, great. I was just wondering if there was any kind of damage that they could cause, and if so, what there would be. But thank you for your information. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks, Scott. Now to Angela in Connecticut. Angela, you're on.
Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you both for your service to birds. I have a question. I've been doing rehab for a long time. Every bird that's come into me this season has been starved. I also have a barn with barn swallows. This is the first year ever in my 3.5 years living here that I have found dead swallows on the ground, and I'm thinking it's because they were starving because of the cold. We had snow on Mother's Day, for Christ's sake.
Nice. Thank you for
that. I'm curious if you've been noticing starvation in swallows in particular or in the raptors, and if in the swallows, is there anything we can do since they're live bug eaters? Is there anything I can supplement their diets with if, in fact, next season we get a cold spell again in May like we did this year?
Well, I echo what your concerns are, and that is I've noticed a what in my opinion is a rather dramatic decline in the number of swallows and other aerial insectivores out there, chimney swifts and nighthawks and the like.
Bummer.
And I'm thinking it has to do with the depletion of our insect population. Mm. and for various reasons. And some of it may be climate or weather related, such as the cold, wet spells that we've had during the spring months. That's an annual hazard that many insect-eating birds have to face. So if I were you, I would urge you to propagate more flowering plants, insect-friendly plants around your property, and with hopes that it will induce a stronger population of insects that might provide them.
Right. Native plantings are what's most important for producing more insects.
And I've seen where this is done deliberately, and it works very, very well. As far as the global population of these insectivores, we have to work on reducing insecticides and other hazards to the environment out there.
Quickly to Gail in Oneonta. Gail, you're on.
Hi. I live near the Susquehanna River, and I just want to make a comment that it's rare that if I don't see a golden or a bald eagle every day when I'm out and look.
Yeah, absolutely. They're all over the place. Water bodies are full of bald eagles.
When I live on the Hudson River in New York, and it's every day. All I have to do is look and listen. Actually, sometimes you hear them before you see them, but they're out there. And it's a remarkable success story, and it proves that we can do some amazing, produce miracles if given a chance, opportunity, and the knowledge, which the research that Peg is working on is the sort of information that leads to those successes.
All right, Gail, thank you very much. All right, Peg DiBenedetto, you have an event coming up. It is when?
We do. It's September 13 through 15. Everybody's invited. You can go to CatskillCenter.org.
CatskillCenter.org.
Right, and click on takingflight/NYSOA at the top of the page, and you can register for the event. Come join our Hudson River Scenic Sunset Birding Cruise on Friday night, the 13th.
That sounds like fun.
It's going to be a blast.
Will cocktails be provided?
Cocktails are there.
Yep. All right. I'll mark that down.
And a lot of birders. Rich, you're going to be on the boat? We're going to have a lot of experts
Rich is going to be on the boat?
I don't know.
All right, cancel my reservation.
We're going to have a lot of birders pointing out all of the water birds that we see that night.
It'll be spectacular. The Hudson River in the evening is a beautiful place to be.
Right.
Rich Guthrie, if people want to send you the pictures of their birds or audio recordings of the birds, how do they get in touch with you?
Please do. I'm at richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
And how do we spell Guthrie again?
G-U-T-H-R-I-E. Guthrie.
So Richard P. Guthrie.
At gmail.com.
And once again, Peg, the website for information on your event?
CatskillCenter.org.
Well, this was a lot of fun. Peg, did you enjoy it?
I had a blast.
You know, did you have trouble getting a word in edgewise with Rich?
Yeah.
It's difficult, isn't it?
Oh, boy.
My shins are black and blue now.
Yeah, I've been kicking him, but he wouldn't stop talking.
I recommend steel-toed boots for
the next
program.
Time.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. The Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, celebrating 100 years of influential art movement with From Bauhaus to Black Mountain College, sponsored in part by Warren County, HydeCollection.org. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, providing the greater Capital Region with custom display cases, trade show exhibit fabrication, interactive kiosks for nationwide conferences, special events, and museum exhibitions, EmpireExhibits.com. And Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionXLEyeCare.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and Peg DiBenedetto for being here today. Thank you for calling. My humble apologies to all of those of you who called and didn't get through. Very popular show. We could easily do a 6-hour version of this program. In fact, maybe for the next fun drive, what we could do is we'll keep doing the show until people pledge, and then we'll stop. In other words, it'll be reverse thing, you know?
I want it to go on forever.
You want it to go on forever? Well, I'm sorry to burst your bubble there, Rich Guthrie. Thanks to Zach Malloy, Susie Chekai, Jim Lavoulis, I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Darren Tracy. Stand by now for the book show.